Beyond the academy walls, the real battle awaited. In the scorched villages of the north, under a merciless Sahel sun, Ibrahim Traoré faced not training drills, but death itself. He bled for people he did not know. He fought for villages the world had already forgotten. Every bullet fired, every child saved, every brother lost, carved the boy into the man he was destined to become. In the blood and dust of forgotten wars, the rising lion took his first real roar. If you haven't already, make sure to follow us and tap the notification bell. We drop new content every day. Stay tuned so you never miss a story. Chapter 3. In the Line of Fire. The orders came down with a cold efficiency that belied the chaos waiting beyond the horizon. Deploy to the Northern Front. Counterinsurgency operations. Rules of engagement fluid. Ibrahim Traoré, newly minted lieutenant, sat in the back of a battered military truck as it rattled and jolted over the crumbling dirt roads that led north, into the scorched, bleeding heart of Burkina Faso's forgotten war. The heat was a living thing, pressing down from above and radiating up from the earth. The air reeked of diesel, sweat, and the faint iron tang of distant blood. Around him, his platoon, some just boys barely old enough to shave, shifted nervously, checking weapons, adjusting gear, muttering prayers under their breath. No one needed to explain what they were heading into. Northern Burkina Faso had become a graveyard of villages and ideals. Islamist militants, a shifting hydra of Al-Qaeda affiliates, Islamic State offshoots, and local warlords, had taken root across the Sahel, exploiting poverty, corruption, and neglect. They struck without warning, melting into the bush after massacres, leaving only ash and grieving mothers behind. The government in Ouagadougou issued optimistic press releases. The reality on the ground was much uglier. This was not a war of uniforms. It was a war of shadows, and Ibrahim was about to step into it. The first patrol seemed almost routine. They rolled through dusty hamlets, stopping to distribute food and medicine where they could. Children ran out to greet them, wide-eyed and barefoot, their laughter shrill and thin. Old men with calloused hands offered wary greetings. Women peeked from doorways, some flashing smiles, others veiling their fear behind guarded eyes. At each stop, Ibrahim dismounted first, hands empty and visible, his body language clear. "I am here to protect you. I am one of you." But trust in these lands was a rare and fragile thing. One evening, as dusk bled across the sky, Ibrahim's unit bivouacked near a small village perched on the edge of a dried-up riverbed. The villagers warned of strange men seen near the bush, men who spoke of holy war and demanded allegiance. Ibrahim listened carefully, his instincts prickling. He doubled the watch that night. It saved their lives. Just before dawn, the first shot rang out, a flat crack that tore the fragile silence apart. Then came the screaming. Militants swarmed from the treeline, faces masked, rifles flashing in the half-light. Mortars thudded into the ground, spewing dirt and shrapnel. Women and children scattered, shrieking. Ibrahim reacted without hesitation. "Form up. Return fire. Protect the civilians." His voice cut through the panic like a whip. He grabbed a young private, paralyzed by fear, and physically shoved him into cover behind a crumbling stone wall. He moved among his men like a conductor, directing fields of fire, calling for medics, shouting encouragement even as bullets snapped inches from his head. The firefight raged for what felt like hours. By the time the sun clawed over the horizon, the militants had retreated, leaving behind their dead, a smoldering village square, and the terrible silence of too many newly dug graves. Ibrahim knelt beside the body of one of his own, a boy named Issouf, barely 19, who had taken a bullet shielding a child. He bowed his head, tears mixing with the dust on his cheeks. There was no ceremony, no speeches, only the bitter, iron taste of reality. This was what they had signed up for, and it was only the beginning. Over the months that followed, Ibrahim's unit became known as the Phantoms of the North. They moved fast and struck hard, operating with discipline and cunning that belied their modest numbers. Ibrahim pioneered tactics that larger, slower government units failed to adapt. Night raids on militant camps, mobile patrols to prevent ambushes, intelligence gathering by building trust with local populations. He treated civilians not as potential threats, but as allies, spending hours drinking bitter tea with village elders, listening, learning. In return, the people began to whisper his name with a mixture of awe and hope. "Traoré, the officer who stood with us, the one who does not steal, who does not abuse, who fights and bleeds as we do." But with reputation came danger. Militant commanders began putting bounties on his head. propaganda leaflets accused him of being a traitor to Islam, a servant of the infidel government. More than once, roadside bombs detonated under his convoys, hurling twisted metal and bodies into the air. Each time, Ibrahim survived, not by luck, but by instinct, by preparation, by an almost supernatural ability to sense when death was near. One brutal night in mid-2021, Ibrahim's luck nearly ran out. They were escorting a convoy of refugees, women, children, wounded men, south toward safer territory. The column stretched too long, vulnerable. At sunset, the attack came. RPGs screamed out of the trees. Machine guns hammered the trucks. The world dissolved into smoke and fire and screams. Ibrahim was thrown from his vehicle, his body slamming into hard earth. Dazed, ears ringing, bleeding from a gash on his forehead, he crawled to his feet and rallied his men. "Hold the line," he roared, voice raw. "Protect the civilians. No one falls back." What followed was not a battle. It was a brawl, chaotic, desperate, close quarters. Ibrahim fought like a man possessed. He dragged wounded soldiers to cover, returned fire with grim precision, even wrestled a masked militant to the ground and disarmed him in the choking dust. By dawn, they had beaten the attackers back. But the cost was brutal. 3 soldiers dead, 7 wounded, 2 civilian children lost. Ibrahim stood among the wreckage, blood seeping into his boots, and made another silent vow. "I will not let their deaths be meaningless. I will fight until there is no breath left in me." That night, as the survivors huddled around a small fire, bandaging wounds and rationing supplies, an old man approached Ibrahim. His skin was like worn leather, his eyes clouded with age but sharp with something older. Wisdom, perhaps, or prophecy. He knelt stiffly before Ibrahim and pressed a withered hand to the young officer's brow. "You carry the spirit of the lions," he whispered in a voice like rustling leaves. "You will not fall, but you will bleed many times before your work is done." Ibrahim said nothing. He simply bowed his head, accepting the old man's blessing and the burden that came with it. By the end of his northern deployment, Ibrahim was no longer just a soldier. He was a symbol, a warrior who fought not for power nor profit, but for the soul of a country that the world seemed eager to forget. But powers both inside and outside Burkina Faso had noticed him. And in dark rooms in foreign embassies and gilded government halls, whispers began to grow louder. "Who is this Captain Traoré? And what might he become?"